Welcome to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine's Fiction Podcast. I'm Janet Hutchings, EQMM's editor. This month's episode is another in the series of Edward D. Hoke radio plays that we've been running intermittently over the past few years. Ed Hoke was known for masterly plotting in the nearly 1,000 short stories he produced. What is less often recognized is that he was an excellent researcher who could recreate time periods other than our own and settings of all different sorts. Here is The Problem of the Lobster Shack from the September 1975 issue of EQMM.
Just watch this boy now, Doctor. I tell you, he's going to be bigger than Houdini. He's younger, better looking, and more charm and personality.
This must be old stuff for you.
Yeah, every escape's a little bit different. He likes unusual settings, and it's tough finding ones that Harry Houdini hasn't already used.
How does he do it?
Magic, Doctor. Pure magic.
It's time once again for Sam Hawthorne, retired New England country doctor, to recall another seemingly impossible crime, another miracle problem. Dr. Sam meets a famous magician and a world-renowned brain surgeon in the story he calls The Problem of the Lobster Shack.
Well, hello there. It's nice to have you back again. Make yourself comfortable, and let me pour you a small libation. There we go. Now, let's see. Where were we? I told you about the old grist mill, didn't I? Oh, yes. Well, it was almost a year later when I was confronted with the problem of the lobster shack. The year was 1924. I was a struggling young doctor at the time and somewhat in awe of people like magicians and brain surgeons. Perhaps I'd better start with the brain surgeon. Back in 1924, there weren't that many around. But I'd heard many amazing stories about the fabulous Dr. Felix Dory of Boston. It was when I determined that a brain operation was the only chance of saving the life of a nearby farmer that I first had contact with the great doctor.
Well, Dr. Sam, the art of making openings in the skull was known to the ancients, and there's evidence of brain surgery in pre-Christian Peru.
That may be, but it's still a rare procedure.
Yes, and I'm afraid we have much to learn about how the brain functions. As for your patient, if the growth hasn't invaded too much area, I can remove it and he will recover. But the part which is removed cannot be replaced.
May I witness the operation?
Oh, certainly. Here, let me show you some of my instruments. Notice the light at the end of this probe.
Uh-huh. And this wire?
It's a finely barbed wire. I have it made of surgical steel to use as a bone saw. It's most effective.
Dr. Dory operated that night and saved the farmer's life. I saw him two or three more times during the spring of that year. And it was during the late spring that Dr. Dory first mentioned his daughter's marriage plans.
Linda's a fine, lovely girl. She's just turned 20, and I suppose I still think of her as a child. But she's a young woman, and they're very much in love.
They met at college?
Yes. Tom Forsythe is graduating in June and then going on to law school. Naturally, I wanted them to wait.
Is she your only child?
Yes. The house will be empty without her. Even away at college, she most often comes home for the weekends. But I suppose Edith and I will get used to it.
I'm sure she'll be very happy.
Say, the groom's family has a summer place on the coast near Newport. The third weekend in June, they're having an engagement party for Tom and Linda. Would you like to come?
Well, are you sure it'll be all right?
Certainly. There'll be tennis and swimming, and a special performance by Julien Chabert.
Chabert? I've always been interested in magic.
Yeah, they say his escapes are even more spectacular than Houdini's.
It sounds like an interesting day. Thank you.
Good, good. I want to convince my daughter that my colleagues aren't all bearded old fogies. I'll see that you receive an invitation.
Yes, sir. I was a colleague of the most famous brain surgeon on the East Coast. He'd said so himself. Well, a lengthy journey by car was something of an adventure in those days. The road to Newport was narrow and rutted. When I finally reached the Forsyth home, I found it to be a sprawling white mansion set smack dab in the middle of an estate that ran from the highway clear to the ocean. Around the side of the house, a huge tent had been erected for the party. There must have been over 100 people inside, and most of them were sipping champagne cocktails, though it was barely noon. Dr. Dory welcomed me with a gracious handshake.
So glad you could make it, Dr. Sam. This is my wife, Edith. Sam Hawthorne is from Northmont, darling.
I'm pleased to meet one of my husband's younger colleagues.
A pleasure, Mrs. Dory.
Our daughter Linda thinks all doctors are old fogies.
So your husband told me. Where is the happy couple?
They're over with our hosts. This way, Dr. Sam.
Don't worry, Sam. We won't be raided. Chief of Police is one of our guests.
Linda Dory and Tom Forsyth were a handsome couple. She was a natural beauty, and he had a wealth of charm that could work equally well on college girls or juries. Forsyth's parents were a bit of a surprise. I'd been expecting the poise and charm of Dr. and Mrs. Dory, but that wasn't the case. Pete Forsyth looked downright uncomfortable in his open polo shirt and white slacks. I wondered how he made his living, but I decided not to speculate.
Doctor, eh? Are you at the Boston Hospital with Dory?
No. I have a small country practice in Northmont.
Never cared for small towns myself.
I must say I admire your house. This is something you don't see in Northmont.
Thanks.
Mr. Forsyth, Chabert is here.
The crowd before me parted, and there he was, sweeping into the gathering with black cape flowing in the best tradition of a stage magician. He was quite a showman. And maybe he'd equal Houdini's success someday.
This is my business manager, Mark Ernst. Some of you met him last evening.
Hello!
Are we ready for the performance?
We're ready. We'll use the lobster shack down by the shore, as we discussed last night.
Fine. You choose a committee to search the shack, to search me, and to tie and chain me in any way they please.
We'll have our committee.
I'll be left alone and the shack locked from the outside. You may guard it, all of you. I will walk out of the shack free of my bonds in 5 minutes. No more.
Dr. Sam, Pete suggested you and me for the committee. How about it?
And our police chief. He should be an expert on locking people up.
Fine with me.
Chief Banner, this is my wife, Edith.
Chief Banner.
I'm happy to meet you.
And Dr. Sam Hawthorne, all the way from Northmont.
Hello.
I don't want you to think all this soap and drinking goes on all the time, Doctor, but the Forsythes you see are something special hereabouts. And, well, a wedding is a wedding, right?
Right. And when is the wedding?
First Saturday in August. Big affair. Want a cigar?
No, thanks.
We should be getting down to inspect the lobster shack.
I followed along behind Dory and the chief. At one point, where the land jutted out into the sea, stood a small wooden structure. It was obvious the shack was no longer used for its original purpose. The old wooden lobster traps piled near the doorway were present only for scenic effect, as was a fishing rod propped up against one of the windows. Dr. Dory unlocked the door, and we stepped inside. It was not as cluttered as I'd expected. There were a number of fishing rods and reels. One of the reels was unwound on the floor, but otherwise, the place was neat and reasonably clean.
Forsyth uses this as a boathouse, keeps his fishing gear here.
Expensive gear, too. Looks like they do surf casting.
Oh, this wooden post in the center seems sturdy enough. Suppose after they get the chains on him, we bring him in here and tie him to it.
Sounds good.
Then we'll lock the door from the outside.
You better search the place first. Make sure he hasn't got a friend hiding here already.
There's really no place to hide in the lobster shack. This cupboard's empty. And the wall behind is solid.
What about the chimney?
The opening is plugged up at the top. Looks like a bird's nest.
They haven't used this fireplace in a long time.
Well, if he can get out of this shack in 5 minutes, I am willing to grant he is a magician.
We went back outside to the crowd of spectators who'd formed themselves into a semicircle around the lobster shack. At first, I didn't see Julien Chabert, but he broke through the crowd, striding down the grassy slope in bright green bathing trunks.
You may chain and bind me when ready.
All right. Now we need a committee to chain him.
How about the future bride and groom? They'll get to know what married life is like.
Linda and Tom came forward, took up the lengths of chain, and wrapped them tightly around Chabert's arms and legs. We guided him into the lobster shack. Chief Banner had a stout length of rope, which he wrapped around Chabert's shoulders, tying him to the wooden post. Chabert's hands, already tightly chained in front of him, were further restrained by Pete Forsythe, with a final chain around the post.
And there you are,
tied and helpless, roped and chained, nearly nude, so you can see he conceals no tools or keys.
One last precaution. I'll take this hammer and nail the window shut.
Any final words, Chabert?
I'll be with you in 5 minutes. You may start timing me from right now.
Pete Forsythe shut the door, threw the bolt, and padlocked it. Around the side, we heard Dr. Dory finish with his hammering.
Well, I don't suppose that was really necessary. No one could get in there to free him without being seen.
That's for sure.
I glanced round at the eager, slightly drunk faces. I was just a young country doctor, and these were like people out of F. Scott Fitzgerald's Great Gatsby.
2 minutes are gone.
Just watch this boy now, Doctor. I tell you, he's going to be bigger than Houdini. He's younger and better looking, more charm and personality.
This must be old stuff for you.
Every escape's a little bit different. He likes unusual settings, and it's tough finding ones that Harry Houdini hasn't already used.
How does he do it?
Magic, Doctor. Pure magic.
Just one more minute.
We could feel the tension in the guests as they waited for the locked door of the lobster shack to open.
30 seconds.
I watched a gull circle slowly overhead, perhaps wondering what all these foolish people were doing standing outside a lobster shack on a hot July afternoon.
The 5 minutes are up.
I guess we did too good a job tying him up.
I've seen him do this trick 100 times. Don't worry, he'll get out. It's just taking him longer than usual.
Are you all right in there, Chabert?
I told you not to worry.
We'd better unlock the door. Keep everyone else back.
I stepped forward and was at Dory's side when the door swung open. The first thing I saw was a blood-stained hunting knife on the floor near the window.
My God, look!
Julien Chabert was still tied and chained to the wooden post. But now, his head sagged in an unmistakable angle of death. Someone had entered the lobster shack, unseen by 100 witnesses, and had cut Chabert's throat.
All right now, everyone quiet down. Quiet down! We've got a murder here, and I'm getting to the bottom of it. Now, I helped search the shack myself, me and the two dogs here. And we know there wasn't a living creature hiding there. And we just searched it again with the same result. Nobody's in there but the dead man. That means somebody killed him while we was all standing around out here. Now, who saw anything?
Nobody entered that shack, Chief Banner. Nobody even went near it.
There's no doubt he was murdered. If we find out why, maybe we'll find out who.
How well did you know this Chabert, Mr. Forsythe?
None of us knew him. He was just a hired performer.
What'll I do without him?
And speaking of that, I'll expect a refund of my $500.
How can you think of money now?
Mr. Forsythe, let's go up to the house. If you'll be good enough to furnish us with a guest list, Chief Banner can check off the names on it and then allow most of these people to leave. How about it, Chief?
Here's the list, Dr. Hawthorne.
How did you happen to hire Chabert for the entertainment?
This is the worst possible publicity. How could this happen to me?
How did you happen to hire Chabert?
He came to me. He showed up at my office with his manager one day last month. They heard my son was getting engaged and suggested I book his act. And, well, I thought it would be a classy stunt.
Did you or your wife know Chabert or Ernst before?
No, but...
But what?
Nothing.
Whatever it is, it'll come out sooner or later.
Well, Tom might have known him. I don't know.
I drifted out to the big living room, where I spotted Mark Ernst just coming in from the outside.
This is quite a joint, eh, Doc?
Could I have a few words with you before the chief does?
Sure, Doc. What's on your mind? Got a little act you'd like me to manage?
You don't seem too broken up by the death of your star client.
Sure I'm broken up. He was a good guy.
Was Julien Chabert his real name?
Nah, that was the name of a French magician 100 years ago. I gave him that name.
What was his real name?
Sammy Gorman. He was just a kid from New York. Learned his stuff by watching Houdini. But I gave him all the flash, all the polish.
How is he supposed to escape from that check?
Well, those were his secrets.
But you must have some idea.
If everybody knew, they wouldn't be secrets. Besides, maybe I can find another magician to take his place.
Chabert must have been insured. Some of his stunts were dangerous.
Sure, he was insured.
Any wife or kids?
Him? You kidding? He didn't like girls.
Then who was the beneficiary on his policy?
Well, I was, I guess.
A strong motive for murder, isn't it?
Well, I didn't kill him.
Someone did. How was the trick supposed to be done?
Now, wait. They won't pin this on me, will they?
Maybe.
Well, I was outside. Everyone saw me. I never even went in there.
Maybe there was something you could control in the way he did the trick.
All right. He had a key.
Where?
It was in his mouth, under his tongue. As long as his hands were chained in front of him, which he insisted on, he could spit the key out and catch it.
What about the ropes?
He flexed his muscles when he was being tied up.
And the locked door?
He had a couple of ways of working on that. You have to know all his secrets.
I guess you've told me enough. Except who might have killed him if you didn't?
I don't know a thing about that.
Whose idea was it to come here?
His. He read about the engagement in the papers.
Did he always approach rich people for jobs?
No, never before. But he thought Forsythe might be good for a bundle. Said he was a bootlegger, running the stuff in from boats offshore.
I went back to the lobster shack. Dr. Dory, Chief Banner, and one of his men were carefully examining every inch of it.
Nothing on the floor. Nothing out of place. It's just like it was when we searched it earlier, Doc.
Did you check the chimney again?
Sure did. And the windows. Still nailed shut. Nothing's changed. There's nothing to go on.
Except for the hunting knife.
Unless someone threw it at him.
Not with a wound like that.
Now, Dr. Sam is right. It had to be drawn across his throat by a human hand.
Who was the last one to leave the shack?
Well, let's see. I was right behind you, and Pete Forsythe was at my side. We saw him bolt the door.
It seems impossible.
Like one of his own illusions.
Oi, Doc. That's it. That's the answer. He did it himself.
As he spoke,
somehow,
we slowly walked outside the shack. Dr. Dory picked up the fishing rod that was leaning against the outside of the shack and kicked at one of the old lobster traps. I left the two men still talking at the lobster shack and trotted back up to the house. Apparently, Tom Forsythe had just been interrogated by one of Chief Banner's men. He stood in the front hall, pale and shaken, talking to his father.
You didn't have to go and tell them that you knew Chabert.
Where did you know him from, Tom?
You stay out of this, Doc.
Oh, what's the difference? New York. I knew him in New York. I spent last summer there.
Chabert told Mark Ernst that you'd be good for a bundle of money, Mr. Forsythe. He knew you were a bootlegger. He came here with blackmail on his mind.
You've seen Chief Banner. Do you think he cares if I'm a bootlegger?
Well, maybe he wasn't blackmailing you because of your whiskey. Maybe it was about your son.
How much do you know?
Tom must have been a pretty close friend to tell Chabert his father was a bootlegger. And it was the announcement of Tom's engagement that brought Chabert here. Mark Ernst implied that Chabert was homosexual.
All right, all right. And it lasted exactly one night.
Chabert wanted money?
$50,000 to keep quiet about it.
What did you tell him?
That I knew guys who'd put him at the bottom of the ocean in a concrete coffin.
And that scared him off?
It seemed to. He didn't mention it again, just talked about today's performance.
When did all this happen?
Last evening.
Was anyone else present?
Not during this. Dury and his wife joined us when we were talking about using the lobster shack for Chabert's escape.
And you told all of this to the police, Tom?
Most of it. I didn't say that my father threatened him. Oh, here comes Chief Banner now.
All right.
Okay, Doc. Down to the lobster shack. You and your boy too, Pete. By jing, I'm going to show you how this little magic trick was worked.
You mean you know who killed him?
I mean I know how he killed himself.
Back at the lobster shack, Chief Banner leaned against the post, his arms crossed in front of him in the manner of the dead man.
Look here now. He decided to kill himself, but in a magical way. I guess he'd figured out he'd go out with big headlines.
He wouldn't kill himself.
Oh, no? Well, I'm going to show you how he done it. You told me that he had a key hidden in his mouth. Well, he used the key to unlock his chains. Then he reached up here to one of the ceiling beams for the knife he'd hidden earlier. He put the key back in his mouth, where we found it, cut his throat, and snapped the padlock shut again while he was bleeding to death.
That doesn't seem very likely to me.
Well, likely or not, it's the only way. There weren't nobody in here with him, and nobody entered or left. We were all watching. He killed himself. It's the only way.
The police began packing up their equipment, and the Forsythes headed back to the house. I walked out onto the dock and stood for a time, gazing off into the choppy water. I knew I was one of the two people who had the real answer to the problem of the lobster shack.
You look deep in thought, Dr. Sam. Aren't you satisfied with Chief Banner's solution?
No. It would take superhuman effort to lock those chains after cutting one's own throat. Besides, Banner had to stretch to reach that beam, and Chabert was a much shorter man. He couldn't have done it.
Why didn't you tell that to the chief?
The truth wouldn't bring Chabert back. Besides, he was a blackmailer. When Chabert found he couldn't blackmail Pete Forsythe, he must have tried you.
Yes.
You knew how much the wedding meant to your daughter, and you had faith in Tom. So, you killed Chabert to silence him.
How did you know?
The fishing line, of course. When we searched the shack earlier, the reel was unwound on the floor. But later, when the police searched it, the floor was bare. Chief Banner said so. Forsythe had given you a key to the shack. It was a simple thing for you to come down last night and set the stage for your illusion.
This morning, just at sunrise.
It was you who suggested tying him to the post, and you who suggested nailing the window shut. While you were nailing the far window, after we'd closed the door and locked it, you reeled in that fishing line with your left hand as you were hammering with your right. You must have arranged it very carefully, so when it was pulled tight, it rose just to the level of Chabert's throat.
If that were true, it would have done no more than give him a bad skin burn, and he might have screamed for help.
The sound of your hammering covered any yelling, and my guess is that a good-sized portion of that line was replaced with your specialty, the barbed steel wire you created for use as a bone saw.
You're a clever young man, Dr. Sam. You'll go far.
I should have realized it sooner. The fishing rod was outside, leaning against the window the first time we searched the shack. And I saw you picking it up a while ago, disposing of the evidence. You only had to have an opening of a fraction of an inch to allow the line to pass through. You tied the hunting knife loosely to the end of the line and stained it with blood. Probably chicken blood.
Human blood. I cut my own finger. I was taking no chances.
When the knife hit the windowsill, it came free from the line and fell to the floor. Chabert was dead, and the illusion was complete. He couldn't have staged it better himself.
What are you going to do?
It's not for me to do anything. It's for you.
Give me until after the wedding, will you, Dr. Sam?
Well, I never spoke to Dr. Dory again. The Chabert case was closed with a verdict of suicide. And 3 months later, shortly after his daughter's marriage, Dory was killed when his car hit a tree on a lonely Boston road. But there were other things on my mind that summer. That was the summer the ghost came back to the haunted bandstand in the park and killed the town mayor. You see, folks around Northmont were getting ready for the big 4th of July celebration and... I see you have to be leaving now, eh? Well, I'll tell you all about it next time.
Dr. Sam Hawthorne, produced by Dave Amaral and based on the characters created by Edward D. Hoke, appearing in Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine. Heard in tonight's cast were Harry Young, Del Bubel, Doug Howland, Jim Watt, John Furch, Anne Dubell, and Richard Scott as Dr. Sam Hawthorne. This is Robert Lasich, inviting you to join us next time for The Problem of the Haunted Bandstand.
The Problem of the Lobster Shack is copyrighted by the estate of Edward D. Hoke. This recording was adapted to make it suitable for podcasting by Jackie Sherbo. You can subscribe to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, where you'll find more stories like this one, by visiting our website at www.themysteryplace.com/EQMM.